This is episode 216, recorded August 11th, 2014.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello.
Now, some people might be wondering, you know, our last episode, 214, came out
after 215.
Yeah, I did.
Well, you know what Doctor Who says. What? Time is not a line. It's sort of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
That's true.
So we reserve the right to go out of order.
Sorry, I will try not to, though, just, you know, in the future. That was just a silly accident. So there you go. So who have we got this week in episode 216?
We have Sean in North Carolina, Mike from Oregon, Dr. Bob from the North Shore of Boston, and Tom in Provo, and Greg in Jamestown, Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Mick in Carnforth, and Marty from Troy, Missouri. Is that a new one? I don't recognize that name.
Sort of new. We'll talk about that, yeah.
Okay.
So,
let's
start.
Are we going to start with the Mike's Google voice?
Yeah, let's start with Mike's Google voice message.
Okay. Hi, Aquarimax guys. It's Mike from Oregon. So basically what I have is a tank that is not cycled, and I have fish in there that I'm trying to keep alive. So I'm doing like a 20% water change every day to try to keep the ammonia levels down, you know. And I'm just kind of wondering what the heck I should do, you know. This has been about a month and a half now, and my ammonia levels are still very, very high, about 4 parts per million. On the tests that I'm doing, no signs of nitrates or nitrites. It's just like the tank is not cycling. It's just stuck. So I was hoping you guys could maybe help me out on what to do. So anyway, that's my message. Hopefully you can give me some ideas. Okay? Thanks, guys. Bye. Hey, Aquarimax, it's Mike from Oregon. I just left you a 2-part message earlier concerning my cichlid tank that won't seem to cycle. Anyway, I forgot to add one bit of important information to those earlier messages. The tank is a 20-gallon tank. It's got two juvenile Moomba African cichlids. I know a 20-gallon tank with cichlids is not a good match, and I'm working on a 55-gallon tank. But in the meantime, this is going to have to hold me over. But anyway, so I forgot to get that bit of information, so I just wanted to give you guys a complete picture of my situation and hopes you can help me. Okay. I think that should wrap up all my messages. Have a nice day. I look forward to your response. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mike, in Oregon, for joining us and for an excellent set of questions there.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually emailed Mike because I wanted to get this to him earlier because I knew if he waited for the podcast, it would be too late to give him any information that would be of any use to him. So I went ahead and emailed him the day I got this message. And what I said essentially was that if you could, if possible, I would just highly recommend bringing the cichlids back. Because it's really stressful on fish to cycle them in the tank, and that was reason number one. Reason number two was that two cichlids in a 20-gallon tank, two African cichlids in a 20-gallon tank, it almost, I mean Rift Lake cichlids anyway, if they're not a pair, they'll probably kill each other. If they're a pair, they'll probably kill each other. So, that's what I said. And Mike said, okay. And I also said, you know, look into fishless cycling, because fishless cycling is probably your best bet. So if you can, take the fish back, do some fishless cycling in that tank, and then you could keep one of the one cichlid in that tank. One African cichlid would be fine. You wouldn't get the same kind of behavior you'd get with, you know, a group of cichlids in a larger tank, but you could just do that. Or you could go into getting a larger tank, like maybe a 60, 80 gallon, something like that, and keep a lot of cichlids in it. You know, a lot of Rift Lake cichlids. So he wrote back and said that his wife is kind of attached to those fish, so he's really going to try to get a pre-cycled tank going on. I did also say some other things, that if you have to keep the fish for whatever reason, you can't take them back or something, you can look into using some of the
Amquil,
like Amquil or something like that can help. It's not gonna alleviate the stress on the fish, but it will be better than nothing, at least in my experience. If you have to have a situation where you have fish where they're not in a cycle tank, it's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. But it's still not the ideal situation. Like I said, I'd recommend taking the fish back. But you could use that. You could also use some of the cycling additives, like Dr. Tim's One and Only, or there are a lot of others out there that
kind of, you know, kickstart it.
Yeah, there's one just called Cycle, and I've used a couple different ones. Anyway, you could do some of those things to at least help alleviate some of the stress the fish are going through during cycle, because it really is stressful and can often kill them, and even if it doesn't kill them, it can often damage them permanently. So really the best thing to do would be to take them back. But he thought of something else too. He thought, he saw a local ad for a tank that had didn't have fish in it, but it had just, the fish had just been removed the day before, so the tank was still cycled. And I think it was a 55-gallon tank. So he's going to try to buy that. So hopefully he has done that, because if he does that and is able to keep the bacteria happy on the in transit,
mm-hmm. You just then, save the water in buckets.
Yeah, then that's a much better situation for the fish. Of course, with the two African cichlids, the aggression is not taken care of in that case, but at least the cycling, it would probably be fine.
So with a 55, don't you have to hit kind of a critical level of how many African cichlids are in there, and then they kind of just pick themselves a little territory and ignore everybody because there's too many to go after to make it worth their time? Is that kind of the idea?
That is often the technique that's used, yes. When you have a large tank, and I would suggest, you know, going above 55. I know years ago we had a 55 with African cichlids in it, and we did that where we put a lot of hiding places in with rocks, and then we had a lot of fish in there, and, you know, they did okay most of the time.
They bred in there.
They did breed in there. We did have some losses, mm-hmm. You know, fish that beat on each other. It happened. But, so I would recommend a slightly bigger tank than that if possible. But anyway, it's definitely a step in the right direction, and we hope it helped Mike out, and we hope to hear from him again. So, Mike, let us know how it's going and what ended up happening. I think the reason he was keeping the fish, he said his wife was attached to the fish.
Right.
And, you know, I can understand that. And trying to find the best thing that you can for them in that situation, I think getting that bigger tank is a good idea. The aggression thing is the main thing that I'm worried about now. But
well, if he puts more in there, will that help? As long as he, you know, puts lots of hiding plates.
Yeah, but the thing is, and you kind of do need to do that all at once. And if the tank is cycled, then they had a lot of fish in there before, and you'd still want to be careful in case you get a spike of ammonia
right.
or something. But it would be a fairly decent situation. You just really have to kind of stock the tank all at once with that kind of situation.
So that they all have to pick their territories at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty, so Sean in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And we had a question that we posed in episode 215 about how you would act if you see someone in a store, a pet store, who needs some guidance about fish, and how you would approach them, or if you would approach them, and so on. So Sean is going to respond to that.
So Sean says, if the clerk wasn't around, I jump right in. That's the way I roll. I try to spin things in a positive way. Glad you guys are back. Missed you.
Yep, sounds good. Mm-hmm. Good way to do it.
He also has something else to say.
Okay.
Says a new topic. To prevent you guys from losing any more sleep wondering how the Cori sand depth study is going, I decided to forego it. I am going to just revamp my 75-gallon with deeper sand, still to be decided. Spent a couple hours this weekend washing sand and still need to wash some more. Using Quikrete pool filter sand from Home Depot. It's got a ton of fine particles in it, but it's what I have, so I'm going to keep using it.
Okay.
I'm also going to pull all the fast-growing stem plants out of there. I wish I had local fish tank buddies I could pass them on to. It's just way too much work keeping them trimmed down. I have a hunch I won't have as many baby Coris making it to adulthood after that with the angels prowling. I put an ad on Craigslist for the Coris, but have no takers yet. I must have at least 30 of them in there now, and he sent a little video of them.
Yeah.
They look very nice.
They do. The tank looks lovely with all those bushy stem plants in there.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. I like the way it looks. It's too bad. I understand that it is too much work. I know. I get behind on trimming mine back a lot, and it looks like pretty crazy.
Jungly.
Yeah, and so I can totally understand that, and but it's just kind of sad because it looks so nice. And the Coris look nice, too.
They do. If anybody wants some Coris, talk to Sean.
Yeah, if you're in near Asheville, anywhere mm-hmm. near Asheville.
Or if they want to ship them, I guess.
Yeah. And I don't know if he wants to do that or not.
Well, I don't know.
But we'll put you the can check out the video too. Yeah, on our the show page. Mm-hmm. Check it out.
We should probably put. Do we put these things up on the Facebook page too?
Well, we put the episode up on the Facebook page, and then you can access it from there.
Okay.
It's typically what we do.
Maybe we should just put the videos up.
Maybe.
Or the link. Okay, so moving a little bit north of Asheville, Dr. Bob from the North Shore of Boston. He says, "Greetings, Russ and Kelly. Good to hear you had a good vacation. In listening to episode 215, I found that there was a bit of distortion that periodically caused your voices to be a bit less melodious than normal during the first half of the recording session. I suspect you corrected the problem mid-session. Actually, I don't know what was going on. What was going on? Maybe the couch was being squeaky.
I don't know either, because I was thinking about that, and I don't remember making any adjustments.
Mm-mm.
But I'm glad that we became more melodious for the second half. I don't know quite what happened, but thank you for alerting us to that.
Maybe the recording machine was a little rusty after vacation, and it needed to get its sound waves underneath it.
Okay.
You know, like sea legs or sound waves.
Sound waves, sea legs. Okay, we'll go with that.
But I'm glad it got fixed.
Yeah.
He says, "The summer experiment with the 10-gallon patio pond is working out quite nicely. The water lettuce and hyacinth are growing like crazy. The temperature fluctuations have not been as wide or high since I took your advice and moved it out of direct sunlight. I have one small 15-cent orange and white comet to battle mosquito larvae." Yay! He seems quite happy. We should need him over here. Too many mosquitoes lately. "He was introduced just after I moved the pot into a shadier location."
I'm glad that seems to be working out.
Mm-hmm. Comets are a beautiful thing, I think.
I do too. We have one.
Yeah, we do. "I had a major issue after returning home from our vacation when I found my 55-gallon aquarium leaking." That's not good. "Apparently the center support on the top frame had broken and the sides were bowing, thereby breaking a seal somewhere on the bottom. It was, luckily, a slow leak and on the concrete floor of our basement. My biggest concern was whether I would have to deal with new tank syndrome when I replaced the tank. I bought a new large trash can that I rinsed well and siphoned out the tank down to about 3 inches. I removed plants, rocks, and wood and carefully placed them in the trash can with the old tank water. I then carefully scooped out the fish. I hope that by catching them in 3 inches of water without the decorations would be less traumatizing than chasing them around a full 55 tank with all the obstructions and hiding places." I think that was a good idea.
Yeah, very good idea. Mm-hmm. I prefer to do that when I can, too.
"I then rinsed out the sand and gravel mix with some old tank water and placed it in the new aquarium. I pumped out the old water from the trash can into the new tank and replaced all the rocks, woods, and plants. I topped off the new tank with about 25% new water to replace that which I used for cleaning sand and gravel. I wanted as much old bacteria as possible for the start of the new tank. I reinstalled the old filter without cleaning the media and let it run for a bit. Then I scooped the fish back into the aquarium. After a few days, I resumed my weekly 25% water changes." Well, that was 3 weeks ago, and I did not have any spike in ammonia. That's nice.
Yeah, well, he did it perfectly.
He did. "The water parameters look like I never changed the tank. The fish are back to their normal behavior. The black-striped sunnies are acting like angelfish, and the blue-spotted sunnies are dashing around between hiding places. That is, until it is feeding time when they all act like a school of hungry piranha. I guess I preserved enough of the precious bacteria to keep the ammonia cycle in balance. It is what I hoped, but I was less than confident. But I would say that your podcasts were the reason I was able to be successful. I simply transferred all the advice you have given about protecting the bacteria on all of the various surfaces, including the filter and media. This, I believe, was the key to success and spared my fish from further stress. I cannot thank you enough." We are happy to have been of help.
Indeed we are. I'm glad it worked out. And like I said, you did that perfectly. Wouldn't have changed a thing.
Textbook.
Mm-hmm.
A plus for Bob. Okay. "To the question you asked this past week. I have provided information and suggestions when shopping in our local pet stores. Fortunately, the shops do provide maximum size of the fish and recommended tank size."
Oh, good.
That's nice, yeah. "On one occasion, when an individual was buying a betta and suggested that they were going to use one of those 12-ounce glow bowls, I piped up and told them that while it might live, it won't be comfortable. I added that for good health, a betta needs stable temperatures of 78 degrees and filtration and regular water changes to maintain good water quality. I suggested a 5-gallon plexicube as an alternative and told them to decorate it with either live or silk plants, as this would be more appropriate for the fish than a bare globe bowl. I did not stand around to be sure they followed my advice, but I did put it out there."
Yeah, that sounds like the good way to do it, too. And And they're like, it'll be a happy beta if they did follow it.
Good job.
Thank you, Dr. Bob.
That was a good message. It's always nice to hear a happy story.
To know that our podcasting has been helpful is lovely.
Okay, so Greg from Jamestown, California. And he starts out, first, let's jump in the way back... jump in the Wayback Machine? Like a time machine?
Like Mr. Peabody?
What?
And Sherman?
What? Am I too young for this one?
Maybe you're too young for that. Mr. Peabody and Sherman were... it was a cartoon dog, Mr. Peabody. And his human, his pet human, Sherman. And they would travel in the Wayback Machine and go solve problems
go
in
way
a fractured
back?
Fashion.
In like a time machine?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
It was like part of the Rocky and Bullwinkle show, I'm pretty sure.
I never really got into Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah, well, it was in reruns when I was watching it, but it was fun.
Okay. Okay. So, pop culture reference explained.
Yeah.
He says, sorry I didn't get into the last live chat. Got the invite, couldn't connect. Yeah, we had some problems with that
one. Yeah, I remember that he was going to do it, but it didn't work out.
We're still figuring out how that works. I really wanted to get into that chat. I had just gotten back from a fish auction and had several things to show off, but most notable was that I had four types of fry at the time: White Cloud, Mountain Minnow, Swordtail, Bristlenose, and Beckford Eye Pencilfish. Had also gotten lots of aquarium stuff.
See, that would have been fun to see.
I know, that would have been neat.
I haven't bred pencilfish.
Have you bred penfish?
No, in fact,
markerfish? Sharpie
fish? Bred White Cloud, Mountain Minnow, Swordtails, and Bristlenoses, but I've never done...
Nothing that you could draw with?
No. Nothing I can draw with. So that would have been fun.
Yeah.
I wish it would have worked out.
Okay, he also says, The Lost Podcast. I really wish that had come out before you went on vacation. I would have loved to meet up or have you over to see my fish room. That would have been cool.
That would have been cool. I wish we could have done that.
I have lots of planted tanks, some dirted, some not. Although, just to throw this out there, that's where my parents live, so I'm sure we'll be back. I have lots of planted tanks, some dirted and some not. I thought of asking if you wanted to meet up, but as you were on vacation, it seemed impolite.
Well, let's do
this.
Oh,
it's all right.
Next time we go out,
we'll
give you a heads up. We thought we had this time. Of course, I just made a mistake and didn't post it. But anyway, for next time.
I think it would be super fun to do like an Aquarimax world tour sometime.
Yeah, and why not start in, you know, Tuolumne
County,
hometown. California.
Yeah, that would be cool. I have on many, 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 many occasions... Oh, I think I read too many minis. That's okay. Lots of times. Spoke up at fish stores. Several times at the one you visited here, whether it was about compatibility of a species where each is different, like betas in a community setting, or where they were showing some prime to a customer and grabbed the one that a cap full is for 50 gallons and the other that is a cap for 10 gallons.
Yeah, I've done that. I have done that. So I'm glad you brought that particular one.
Yeah.
No, I mean, what I mean is I've seen people who they're about to grab some dechlorinator, and I say, you know what? That's just diluted. Get this stuff. It's cheaper. So
yeah,
I have done that. It's a good thing to do, I think.
He says, yes, I've gotten dirty looks and less than par service after jumping into a conversation, but it was worth it. Most of the time they agree with what I've said, but not always. I usually tell the people about the podcast and my YouTube page. Oh, did we know that Greg had a YouTube page?
Yes, he sent us some of his videos and we posted
them. Okay.
Sometimes and thank you for passing on the podcast, too.
Yeah. I do it at any pet store I'm at. Just ask what they keep when you hear them. Just ask what they keep when you hear them talking to the store clerk. You usually get most of the info about the tank with one question.
That's a good way to do it, because it's a non-invasive question.
Yeah, it's true.
But it elicits a detailed response.
That is a very good idea.
Yeah.
We can all pick that up.
Yeah.
I've done this at many pet stores, including chain stores like Petco and PetSmart. The chain stores like it less, but I think it is because the average fish keeper knows more than most chain store employees, and they get their feelings hurt when you tell them they're wrong or only partly right. I think that kind of hits it on the head. Most mom-and-pop places seem to like it. They're into fish, not just for money, and who doesn't like a friendly argument over a shared hobby? It seems to me it would be easy to forget little bits of info about all the different species of fish that are at most stores, and also all the other things that pop up that people have to remember while working. So I throw my 2 cents in every chance I get. If the store worker's that upset, I don't care. But if the customer doesn't care to share, I leave them be.
Sounds like a good policy. Mm-hmm.
He says, for the one who wants to breed the betas, if there's a... We had somebody...
Yeah,
who
was talking about breeding betas, and they were wondering what to do with the babies.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So he says, if there's a fish club near them, they could donate them or sell them at the auctions that most of them have. PetSmart might give you beta cups to take them in. Mine did, but they may not allow it at the one that you are near. Probably depends on the manager.
Right.
Also check Facebook. We have a local buy and sell page for all sorts of things. One is animals. If you have one for your area, you could sell them or give them away somewhere there. That's a good idea.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I would try to find the closest fish club. Mine is 100 miles away. I only go 2 times a year for the mega auction and watch the meetings on YouTube. Sacramento Aquarium Society. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But if my betas were young enough still, I would take them and donate them.
Oh, good suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you very much, Greg. I really like that idea of just asking somebody, oh, what kind of fish do you keep? And then you...
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good way to bring out everything. Because if they're at all nervous or confused about something, that's a very gentle way to bring them out.
Yeah, that is a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's good advice. Okay, we have Tom in Provo next. And he says, I have sometimes wanted to say to people in fish stores, don't worry about your choice. You have no idea what you're doing, and whatever you buy will be dead in a week. My wife, however, reminds me that most people do not respond well to this sort of approach. See, Tom can use Greg's question, and then we'll be there. I like Greg's question. I'm going to use... Well, no, you're going to use Greg's question because I can't give people advice. But
yes, you could.
He says, generally, I would offer advice only if it were clear that the potential purchaser seemed aware that they needed help. In that case, I might say something like, I have a little experience with fish. Would you like some suggestions? But I would be prepared to hastily retreat if they did not want my help.
Yeah, that's always good. Mm-hmm. That's important.
And he says, as always, thanks for the show. I'm really enjoying my tank, and without your suggestions and encouragement, I would have given up long before it got to the enjoyable point. Beatus est pisciculus.
I'm glad we were of help. It's just lovely to hear it.
It really is. It's nice.
And that was very
Maybe
amusing.
That should be a t-shirt, too. Don't worry about your choice. You have no idea what you're doing, and whatever you buy will be dead in a week.
It's that so
can
true
be the,
in many cases.
The sarcasm t-shirt. Okay, so now we have Jeremiah. Oh, where is Jeremiah?
From Grand Rapids.
Oh, Michigan, right. Okay. He says, hello, glad to have you back after your vacation. I hope it was a good time. And it was. Thank you again for everybody who has said vacation wishes. That was a really awkward sentence. That's okay. It didn't quite come out of my mouth the way that it was supposed to.
That's okay.
That's kind of frequent for me. You guys know it by now. You still love me anyways. Okay, Jeremiah says, I thought I'd provide an update on my 20-gallon planted tank. The neons are doing wonderfully, and the guppies have had a few fry. I suspect they are having many fry, and then I miss them, and so only a few escape the raven adults, but such is nature. This way I'm sort of naturally selecting for faster and faster guppies.
It does seem to happen after a number of generations that the guppies don't eat quite as many of their babies. Maybe it's because they're getting faster, but yeah, you probably are getting a lot more fry, but it's nice that there are some checks there, otherwise you just get overcrowded.
Yeah,
so.
And then nobody's happy. It says, my crips are doing wonderfully. The Italian Val, however, is not. I have a few theories for this. One, the possibility of allelopathy?
I've heard it pronounced that way.
How do you say
and
it?
And allelopathy, I've heard both.
Allelopathy.
I like the one you did better.
What did I just say?
Allelopathy.
Allelopathy.
Because it rhymes with homeopathy.
Okay, I'll say allelopathy. Maybe I won't. The possibility of allelopathy / plant chemical warfare between the Crips and the Val. I've heard rumors of this and remember something in the Wallstad book about Val and Crips not working so well. This is sounding vaguely familiar about plants... Having
fighting
chemical,
each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What? Tell us again.
Well, that's what allelopathy or allelopathy, depending on how you pronounce it, basically what it is. It's plants that are releasing chemicals to discourage other plants from growing. And it, in some cases, they actually kill each other. In other cases, they just inhibit growth.
So what would be the other plant that's squirting?
I was thinking it's the crypts.
I was thinking crypts were fish. Am I confused? Am I thinking of something else?
Yes. I don't know what you're thinking
of. I don't know what I'm thinking of either.
Crypts, I got some that tinker
over there. What were we just talking about before we pushed the button? About how often do I make a fool of myself on the podcast?
No, that's
okay. I'm the comic relief. I don't have to know what's a fish and what's
a
plant.
Those kind of reddish brown ones over there, those mm-hmm. are crypts.
Oh, okay.
And some of the little green ones are too. There are two different varieties in there.
So, crypts and val, two little gang plants. Plant gangs.
The crypts and the vals?
Yeah. Just don't let them get a hold of any bandanas.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I've ever kept them in the same tank. Actually, I've kept vals, although I don't know that I've kept Italian vals, but I've kept vals and I've kept crypts, but never in the same tank, so haven't had experience with this one. But he does come up with some other ideas of why it might be happening too, doesn't he?
He does. His second theory is, my guppies have a tendency to bottom feed on detritus from time to time. Could they be nipping the val, possibly? Do I maybe need to feed more than once a day?
Maybe, but I would watch carefully. I've never had problems with guppies and vals, and I have kept them together. But, you know, so I'd watch them and see if that mm-hmm. seems to be an issue, but probably not.
Okay. Number three, since my python is no longer usable as I screwed the sink attachment back on too tight, I've been using a 2-gallon jug to refill the tank. Perhaps the water flow is too high and is damaging the leaves. I've noticed I often have leaves floating up after my weekly water change.
It could be a possibility. I mean, they might just be floating because they were already dislodged because they're not doing well, so they're weaker, and so they're easy to dislodge, and then they get mm-hmm. dislodged because of that. It's not necessarily causative, but I would watch that carefully the next time you pour it in, how hard you're pouring it in, and whether or not that seems to damage the healthy leaves.
See where it's hitting mm-hmm. it.
And hopefully you're able to get a replacement for the part of your python that screws into the sink.
Yeah, that's always so sad when the python doesn't work.
You can run to the store and just grab a part for, you know, $5
the hardware store.
$3 or something, and then fix it. I've done that on a number mm-hmm. of occasions. Had, like, Saturday morning, I'm doing a change, and all of a sudden I realize that one of the connectors on my sink is
stripped.
And so, right in the middle of water change, I have to run to the store.
Yeah.
You know, turn all the water off, of course, but then run to the store and get a part. And one nice thing, I don't know if I should say this because maybe Python people would be mad with me, but those parts seem fairly portable across brands,
mm-hmm.
and you can even build one without buying Python parts if you get you go to a store that has waterbed filler parts. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the parts can be interchangeable.
That's good to know.
Especially the parts that hook up to your sink. So
cool.
They can often be cheaper that way.
Okay. And he says, I'm considering either getting more val or trying a different plant with a similar growth pattern, i.e. thin and tall, as I like the layer it gives the tank in the back. I still have no foreground plants to date.
Well, let us know when you do the water changes if you do notice that and so on. And I wish I could comment more on the crypts and vals, but I don't really know anything about how that might be affecting it.
Mm-hmm.
So if any of you have had experiences with that, please chime in.
Okay. He also has another thought.
Mm-hmm.
He says, in addition to keeping fish, I also keep several reptiles and arachnids. That's my primary hobby, actually. I have several roach colonies.
It's okay. It's not in our house. It's okay.
I know. It's just the idea.
It's okay.
Nothing against Jeremiah or anybody else.
It's a funny story, though. It really is.
Okay. But I hate roaches. Just I have to throw that out in the universe.
Okay.
When I got the fish tank from my brother, it came with some of those sort of weekend feeder things. I had no use for them since I just don't feed on vacation and they make the water all achy. Anyway, I threw them to my roaches a few months ago, figuring they'd eat them. They didn't touch them. I just found them when I was moving the colonies to different tubs. These are roaches which in the wild feed primarily on guano from fruit bats. If they will eat fecal matter and won't eat the weekend feeders, I don't know that those weekend feeders are something people should use in their fish tanks. That is a very good point.
What's heartily agree.
What's in them?
Well, there are several different formulations out there. And I don't know which one Jeremiah was using or not using, as the case may be. But some of them look like they're made out of plaster.
They really do.
And others look a little less indigestible. But so I'm not sure which one these were. But at any rate, I totally agree with what Jeremiah said. I would never use one.
Oh, unless your fish fast for a couple of days. Usually that's fine. I mean, unless they're like wee little fry.
Right. If you have little fry
or something like
you
that,
you need to make special arrangements. If you don't have little fry, don't feed your fish if you're leaving for a weekend.
It's exactly. better for them.
It is better for them. Safer than getting in someone who doesn't know a lot about fish to come feed them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot safer. It's not going to hurt them one bit.
No, it'd be good
healthy
for them.
Healthy fish are fine for a weekend or longer. But they won't... I have no use for those weekend feeders.
No.
At all. And this is a cool story that just really hits, hits home.
It's
with that.
Very it's true, because like he says, if cockroaches won't even eat them, then dang.
Cockroaches, yeah, especially cockroaches that specialize in eating bat guano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, can I just tell you guys, when we lived in Hawaii, I'm sure we've talked about this before, but it was a very old
building.
Yucky building.
With
lots of insectile residents.
Most of them were
cockroaches.
Of the roach persuasion, yes.
We still have, but we had even more at the time, VHS tapes still. Probably about half of our VHS tapes got thrown away because the roaches would crawl into them and eat the tape, the actual videotape.
It was
pretty It's not gross. Even, like, organic matter.
Honestly, I don't really know what they're made of. I know they're a magnetic component to them, but that's all I know.
I don't know, but if they'll eat, you know, roaches will eat bat guano and they will eat VHS tape, but they won't eat the weekend feeders. So thank you, Jeremiah, for sharing.
Yep, it is an amusing story, but it's also with a good point.
Yep. Oh goodness, I'm going to yawn. Excuse me.
Uh-oh, you just yawned on the air.
I did, I'm sorry. It's been a doozy of a getting back into everything time.
Yep. Who's next?
Mick!
What does Mick have to
say? Yay, Mick. He says, "Hi guys, glad you're back in the land of fishy podcasts. Thank you, we are pleased to be back."
Indeed.
"I have permission from the radio station to use the audio clip wherever and share it for public broadcast on any web media outlets. So if you want to include it in a podcast or clip on anything else, you can with pleasure." Good. Yeah. So we can get that up then?
Yeah, we can make it available.
Yay, because that was a really fun interview.
It was.
Mm-hmm. "It was really good to hear your comments on being in the aquarium shop recently. I have had to do several fish rescues lately from people who have been sold tiny tanks and goldfish that end up with a green watery mess and often dead or deformed fish. These are all from supposed local aquatic specialists, too."
Hmm.
That's a good thing that Mick was there to take in the poor fishes.
It was indeed.
And he says, "I was wondering if you would like to do a joint podcast in the next couple of weeks to talk about tank busters and keeping much maligned goldies in appropriate tanks."
I think it would be awesome. And in fact, I emailed about him.
Mm-hmm.
I emailed him
so
about it.
So I think we're
it.
Working that out.
Yeah, we're
so you guys
to
get to have another Mick interview, which will be fun.
Which will be fun. It's been a while.
"In fact," he even says, "it's a bit of a soapbox of mine just now, to the point where I am starting a help sheet for the shop explaining the issues." I think that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
See, Mick is a fabulous pet store owner.
I agree.
He says, "On a different note, we have had a new website built for the shop, and the link is below, so we should put that up, too."
Yeah, I checked it out. It's cool.
He says us a little other note, too, which I'm really excited about.
So am I.
Well, I didn't mean you weren't.
Oh, I know. I'm adding my excitement.
Yeah. We're both excited.
Yeah.
He says, "Also, in the absence of Aquamax t-shirts, I have had some Fangs and Fins staff shirts made up for you, which I will mail out to you soon." Yay!
We're going to have to take a picture in them and then post
it. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And he even That's says, really "Play cool. your cards right, and I might even slimp in some more mint cake." So, now the question is, which cards do we have to play?
Let's hope we're doing it right.
Yes. So, I'm excited about that. That will be really cool.
It will be cool. And we're going to post his link to the new page up. So
yes.
people can go
yes,
visit
yes,
it,
yes.
check it out, and share it.
Absolutely. Okay, last one. We have Marty from Troy, Missouri. And is this from YouTube? He was commenting on a YouTube video.
Yes, which is why I said he was sort of new, because he has contributed to the show before, but under his YouTube alias. So now he's doing it.
Okay. What was his YouTube alias?
I think Bloodhound122.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, we have.
Okay.
Responded before.
And he just has a question about the springtail cultures, and he says, "I have to ask, what purpose does the lump charcoal serve? It is baffling me."
Okay. Well, I haven't rehearsed this at all with Kelly.
Oh, what am I doing?
So I'm just going to ask her, and I'm okay. This is
I know what it is.
Yes. So just tell me what one thing.
Surface area.
Okay, good. Yes. Surface area is one of the major purposes for the charcoal, because charcoal has an immense surface area. So it wicks water up from the bottom layers of the culture, mm-hmm. and allows the charcoal to be, you know, very, very moist, but it's not so wet that it's, you know,
soggy,
but it's very, very wet, but it provides a nice moist and humid surface for the springtails to walk around on.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's all in chunks, you know, that are broken up and everything, it's a lot of surface area, and they like surface area. They can regulate where they like to hang out, and they find the most humid bits because they like to be humid, but they can't really hang out. Well, they can hang out on the surface of water, but they can't utilize the space under the water. So you just put kind of a thin layer of water, but there's all this really moist surface that's wicking up water constantly for them to hang around on. And it does seem, and this is, I'm just sort of guessing on this one, but it also seems to be a good place for their food to grow.
What do they eat?
And they eat all sorts of things. They're scavengers. They're detritivores, I should say, more than scavengers, but they eat fungi and things like that too. You know,
what do we feed them? Do we feed them nutritional yeast?
We mostly feed them nutritional yeast, yeah.
Okay.
I've experimented with a couple other foods.
But there's other stuff growing on the charcoal that they're just grazing on?
Well, on the nutritional yeast, sometimes other fungus will start growing on the nutritional yeast, and they'll eat that too.
Oh.
And then when we put them in a vivarium, they eat whatever, you know, detritus there is in there. So it's a good medium for that to occur as well. So those are a couple of reasons why we use the charcoal. And another one is that charcoal, unlike some of the other substrates, does seem to discourage mites, which compete with the springtails for food.
I wonder what it is about the charcoal that discourages mites.
I don't know. I haven't really had big problems with mites for a long time, but before I had the springtails on charcoal, I had them on leaves and, yeah, mostly leaves, just dried mm-hmm. leaves is what I kept them on, like magnolia leaves and live oak leaves, that kind of stuff. And eventually, mites started to be a problem.
Interesting.
And I thought, I better just convert this to charcoal. So I did.
Is there just something chemical in there that the mites don't like?
I don't know if it has to do with the moisture levels
mites
or what.
Mites hate surface area? Probably not.
Probably not, but I don't know. Whatever it is, the charcoal seems to discourage them. And I'm not the first person to discover that. Lots of people have mentioned that charcoal cultures seem to discourage the growth of the mites, but it does seem to work. So those are a couple of reasons why. Because I have springtails growing in other cultures, in my isopod cultures, mm-hmm. that are coconut fiber, ground coconut fiber with a big layer of leaves on top and some wood and stuff like that. I have springtails in there, and they do fine. And I don't have mites there either. But they don't grow in the profusion. They do well, and they breed in there, but they don't multiply to the extent that they do in the charcoal cultures, which might be partly the fact that they're competing for resources with the isopods, may or may not, but the density on the charcoal cultures is higher.
Okay.
So,
there
you
go.
There we go. I think that should be more or less a complete answer, I think.
I think everything has been covered.
Yeah, so I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. I'd like to thank those of you who answered a question that we posed in episode 215.
Mm-hmm. Anybody still wants to answer that question, that's fine. Go ahead.
Right. And to everybody who contributed in any way, shape, or form, we always appreciate it. So, until next week,
may the fish
be with you.